You've all been very, very patient. It is now time for us to accept the testimony from the opposition. I know that the mayor of Lewis is here and would like to speak. I also have been made aware that certain of you are represented by counsel. So we will have the mayor first, and then followed by Mr. Sergovic. Mr. Sergovic is an attorney in Georgetown who is representing a couple of groups that I'm sure many of you are parts of, or at least aware of. He will have a presentation, hopefully not as long as the applicants, but if it is, it is, and we're going to let him make it. So, and then we will take testimony from anybody else who wants to speak. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. My name is James Ford. I'm the mayor of the city of Lewis. I live on Jefferson Avenue in Lewis. And I have some documentation I'd like to enter into the record, submit written documentation to the record, and I'm going to be...
Excuse me, yep. Excuse this, but not going into great detail.
That's fine, sir. Okay.
I'd like to thank members of the Planning and Zoning Commission for the opportunity to speak and for your patience this evening. We appreciate it very much. And I would invite the members to visit Lewis if you have not already, certainly any time, but if you could in the near future, to personally view the concerns of the residents and to look at the area in general. I'm speaking on behalf tonight of the city of Lewis as an elected official representing constituents and their concerns, their views and opinions, which by far clearly are objectionable to the proposal. We reference a letter submitted to the Plus Review by the City of Lewis as part of the documentation dated April 27, 2009, expressing concerns as a response to the Plus presentation by the applicant. We'll get into some of those concerns in a little bit more detail later on. The Plus application is a rezoning of 68.3-acre request, and the public hearing at the county level this evening is advertised as 45.77 acres. Leaving 22.53 acres for, quote, future development. The application is granted. The remaining 22 acres will certainly be presented and will have a standing for approval should this one be approved. The site plan and subdivision of land use, as presented and has been mentioned this evening, meaning only the 46 of the 68 total acres of the development, is totally detached from the zoning approval. Land use by change of zone would then be regulated by all county ordinances applicable to that zone, height, setbacks, lot coverage, and all the permitted uses. The list of permitted uses adds an additional 45 to 50 potential commercial land uses as being permitted. Part of that, or that entire list is, as I'm sure you're aware what they are, as part of the submitted documentation. Without any contingency or condition of the proposed development attached to the zoning change, any one of those permitted uses could be applied to the acres under consideration. Where is the need to rezone this land, and the burden of proof has not been presented this evening? I have to take a moment to respond just impartial to the comments about the city of Lewis and its annexation procedures in the past and share some information with you. As was mentioned, we had an annexation committee and an annexation report that was submitted in the mid-1990s. It was found to be prudent and necessary for all infrastructure to be in place to serve the annex areas prior to any annexation activity occurring. So we began the process to do that, which was quite extensive. We went through a capital projects analysis, reviewed and looked at all the infrastructure needs for the city, made a list of capital projects to be addressed for the future of our community. We marketed the potential issuance of bonds through a referendum to our community. We held a referendum to vote in order to borrow money. The referendum allowed the city of Lewis to borrow up to $39.5 million and was approved by almost a 3-to-1 vote of the residents that voted, thus showing support for improving infrastructure, people stepping up to the plate to pay their taxes, and offer the opportunity to annex in the future. At that time, the wastewater treatment plant was not able to provide extended service beyond its means. We have now done quite a lot of improvements to that with the opportunity to yet enhanced service by a future expansion. Thus, we were able to explore annexation at a much more aggressive rate. We currently have a pre-annexation agreement with Cape Henlopen High School. We have been in consideration for discussion with the project Schofield for annexation. We recently did annex an adjacent portion of town called Savannah Place, and we're providing services outside the city with future annexation will be available in the near future. The proposed area was identified to not, the proposed area for the Village Center was proposed, was presented as to not be identified in our annex area, which is correct. We drew the boundary at Gills Neck Road. However, it is identified as an area of concern. I'd like to call our Board of Public Works General Manager, Ken Meekum, to come up to address some water issues, environmental issues concerning the water recharge in the well areas, if that's Mr. Meekum.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, my name is Kenneth Meekum. I'm General Manager of the Board of Public Works of the City of Lewis. The Board of Public Works was chartered by the General Assembly in 1901 to provide electric, water, and sewer service to the City of Lewis. And the concern of the Board of Public Works is not just about the science and the engineering that's involved in this particular project. Even though we recognize that we have a grave concern with regard to our wellhead protection area and the recharge area that this project would impact. Well, I'll admit that the case could probably be made to support either side of the issue. For every piece of engineering that we might present to support our case, we feel the applicant could probably present information to mitigate our concerns. You've heard a lot about water balance, about recharge from stormwater management practices, things of this nature. This is our real concern in the fact that these indeed are things that could be done. And our concern is the fear of failed promises. The applicants can say what they propose to do and what they propose to build. In the past, there have been situations that have impacted our area where those have not been carried out. The board has no recourse. The city has no recourse in these issues. They're outside the city limits. We have no political jurisdiction. We're not a part of the approval process. As I said, this has happened in the past, and this indeed is our concern for the future. The Board of Public Works of the City of Lewis is opposed to this project because of failed promises. Promises to protect the recharge area that serves our 3,000 water customers, or promises to provide opportunities to enhance our system that have not been met. Thank you.
Since the last application was submitted, the DRBA has presented plans for improvement of the Freeman Highway Bridge to the City of Lewis, and work will begin this winter. Plans do not include widening of the bridge or the approaches. Therefore, regardless of whatever potential widening of additional lanes added to King's Highway is presented as this evening, as right-of-ways will be dedicated or provided, a bottleneck will still occur as you approach Lewis from the south. This will complicate access to the city, negatively impact transportation services, EMS response, ambulance approach to the hospital, police and fire services to and from the city, as well as support and backup from other agencies. This will negatively impact the business community as frustrated drivers cannot get into the Lewis downtown area. The proposed Anchor grocery store is yet another threat to the small town quality of life services provided by local business and everyday traffic residents is degraded. Since the last application, Lewis has received designation for historical and scenic byways classification recognized by Delaware Department of Transportation. Gills Neck Road and Kings Highway are two of the roads recognized for this special and unique quality, the first in Sussex County. Currently, the city is under contract with the Renaissance Group for a study to review carrying capacity of our approaching corridors and streets, as well as a potential shuttle jitney service to offset some vehicular travel and parking demands. The jitney service would utilize existing parking areas through partnership agreements, not creating additional parking lots and impervious surface. Final results of the study are pending, but preliminary studies indicate failing capacity at times already exist. Additional commercial zoning and widening of roads is not the solution. The city, in conjunction with the Greater Lewis Foundation and the University of Delaware Sea Grant Advisory Program, has conducted a data survey for the FutureScan project and moving forward towards a proposed sub-regional planning concept with the city, the county, state, and adjacent property owners is the main result of that study. At this time, we have two consultants on board with the city involved with this, and Pat Fox and Bruce Galloway, and I would like Mr. Galloway to come forward to address a little bit of the concept of the sub-regional plan that could come out of FutureScan that we hope could resolve some of the log jams that exist.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim. My name is Bruce Galloway. I live in Severna Park, Maryland. Pat Fox is head of the Fox Group. She's from Annapolis, Maryland. Before you call me...
Bring your passport with you, sir.
Don't call me a carpetbagger now. I worked on the first Lewis plan and the first Lewis zoning ordinance years ago. Plus, right now in Rehoboth Beach, we're finishing up the third edition of their comprehensive plan that I've been responsible for, so I'm a little bit familiar with the area. I'd like to talk about an elephant that's in this room, and the elephant, you counted them all up, there's a lot of opposition to this, a lot of opposition to this plan. Planning's hard to do. Why is it hard to do, particularly in this area? Sussex County, Lewis, Sussex County, Rehoboth Beach, Sussex County, Bethany Beach. There's no great history of cooperative planning. Planning isn't just preparing what you think is best for your jurisdiction. It's cooperating with other jurisdictions. That cooperation has to cut both ways to get the best result for everybody. That includes the developers, that includes the residents, that includes the politicians, that includes the tourists. We have not done a very good job of that. We really haven't. It's been the bane of my existence over here for the past 20 years, trying to get cooperation among all the parties. Mayor Ford mentioned FutureScan. FutureScan was an effort, let's call it a public-private effort, to bridge that gap, to say that the state, the county, and the city must cooperate in planning. We've heard a lot about conformance of this project with your comprehensive plan. You have a very tough job. You're asked to decide a winner and a loser in this situation, and you should never be asked to do that. Looking at a comprehensive plan is not, to quote the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, simply a matter of calling balls and strikes. Sometimes you got to get up and pitch, too, and sometimes you got to hit. You have the community in your hands. You have property rights to balance with community rights. That's your job. It's not to call balls and strikes. Is this policy supported? Is that policy not supported? You do that, but you bring your heart and your soul to the decision. What we're doing, and we will continue to work in this regard, regardless of your decision, but we will come before you and ask you to be part of our effort. We're continuing FutureScan. We developed a concept scheme for the Greater Lewis area, which includes the property under discussion tonight. It heavily relies on identifiable neighborhoods, identifiable green connections throughout the city and the region, and mobility. Not better access, mobility. Bikes, people, cars, shuttles, water taxis, everything. We have a memorandum, Lewis has a memorandum with the county for cooperation in development review. We're going to ask you to recommend to amend that memorandum of understanding to include cooperative planning in the Greater Lewis area. And that cooperative planning will be detailed with the state and its agencies joining together with the city and the county to produce a result that works for everybody. I firmly believe that this property will be better and more profitable as a result of an effective, honest planning process that includes everybody in the region, and where the letters received would be 44 in favor and one opposed. That's the result that we want from planning, and we have a failure of planning here. We have a way out. I've heard 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years as this project is phased in and out. I think we have some time to do some serious planning, joint planning, that's never been done in this area before. We're on our way. We will continue working with the state. We'll continue working with the county to try and get this operation going. We can solve these problems, but we can't do it when we fail to plan. And we see the results of that tonight. Thank you very much.
The city acknowledges that the Lingo towns and families have deep roots in our community, but there is no assurance that once this land is upzoned and will remain in their hands or be developed as presented here this evening, the next owners may not have the same high standards of sensitivity to local concerns. If the zoning change is approved, any permitted use recognized by the county commercial zone could be built there. The county, not Lewis, density, height, and setback requirements would apply. The city is concerned that upzoning will negatively impact the character of the area, the wellhead protection area, and will create safety issues on the surrounding roads. The city of Lewis recognizes a need for managed, orderly growth coordinated through various levels of government, property owners, and service providers. Lewis has entered into a memorandum of understanding with Sussex County and has and will continue to attempt to strengthen this agreement through intergovernmental cooperation. Lewis has hired planning consultants, is reviewing carry capacity for our roads, as well as exploring local mass transit options using green energy sources. Development should proceed following all best practices, sustainable methods to produce the utmost quality product that is beneficial to the city, county, state, residents, and the property owners of today and tomorrow, while offering appropriate economic recovery and employment opportunities for now and the future. Lewis's recent history of prudent and appropriate successful use of land development can be reflected by both the Canal Front Park project and the Canary Creek development. Both projects are examples of the city communicating with the developers to maintain a quality of life for generations to come. I truly believe that this can be accomplished if given the opportunity. The historic special sense of place provided by the community is not only appreciated each day by its residents, it is reflected by the outpouring of concern, involvement, and testimony presented. Many, many times in the past, the people of Lewis have stood up for what they believe in and what they want Lewis to be, to stay, and to become. We are here again to voice concerns for preservation of the first city and the first state, seeking to maintain our quality of life. This zoning change consideration is not in the best interest of Lewis. I respectfully request each of you deny the request presented this evening. I thank you for the opportunity to address you.
All right, sir, we thank you. Okay, Mr. Sergovic.
For the record, my name is John Sergovic. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown. My firm, Sergovic and Carmine, has been retained by Managing Growth Around Lewis, Inc., and the Citizens Coalition, Inc., which are membership corporations organized to express their members' interest in land use decisions affecting their members. Our clients opposed the upzoning request. Originally, I had planned to have myself speak and my expert speak and then deliver our booklet. But since Mr. Johnson indicated a desire to question everybody at the end, I thought it may be easier for you gentlemen to have our booklets before rather than after the speakers.
Let's have them.
Thank you. Just to outline how we will present this, I'm going to make a somewhat detailed presentation with respect to comprehensive land use compliance or lack thereof. Also, some other legal issues that I think are raised by this application. We are then going to have three experts testify with respect to their observations of the application and the materials in the application. We'll have Mr. Linhart, who testified on behalf of my same clients on the last application, who's a traffic expert. Mr. Moyer, some of you may be familiar with Mr. Moyer. He's a longtime DNREC employee, and he will testify as to certain lack of information in the applications whereby the public as well as the commission is deprived of meaningful information to analyze what's being presented. Then we'll also have Mr. Hewitt, who also testified before about the economic implications and of this proposal. We'll also have Gail Van Gilder, who's the Lewis Science Byway Committee chair, speak about the two roads that have been recently designated as scenic byways, and there is an implication under the land use plan because of that in the mobility section, and I don't think DelDOT has recognized that it has already approved these scenic byways and is not then following the federal guidelines for recognized scenic byways. We'll also have submissions by Mr. Tyler, the president of Citizens Coalition, Inc., who's been here before speaking against upzoning in this corridor leading into Lewis on two occasions, and also Mr. Matico, who is the chairman of the managing growth around Lewis, will also testify. With that said, and hopefully you all have booklets, including Mr. Schrader, I'll turn to tab one, and unlike Mr. Key, I'm not going to try to read from my written submissions, at least not the first two issues. We've got two procedural issues. When this applicant withdrew CZ number 1630, I think they did not comply with the ability to withhold reapplication for 1 year. And why I say that is section 115.216E of the code, same procedure with the Planning Commission as with the council. You can withdraw your applications up to 2 days before the public hearing. The applicant here withdrew its applications not within the 2 days before. They did it after the public hearing before the county council, and they filed the request for withdrawal on the day of the decision. What's the problem? The council can approve a withdrawal, but the code requires the council to state good cause. The applicant didn't ask or specify a reason for good cause. No determination was made by the council as to what the good cause for withdrawal was. So the text of the ordinance moves them back to 1 year for a substantially similar application. And this is a substantially similar application, notwithstanding the alleged reduction, because there is no actual reduction, it's just a staged reapplication. The other aspect, the council in approving, and that's the council consisting of Mr. Dukes, and it's the old council. They gratuitously stated that the applicant requested and they could have expedited retreatment or an expedited rehearing. Unfortunately, the old council did not do that by ordinance. They just did it gratuitously. Therefore, it's not a binding act on the current county government, and this application should not be receiving expedited treatment because the persons eligible for expedited treatment are identified in ordinances adopted by the council, particularly Ordinance Number 1920 and Ordinance 2016. And the two reasons are prepaying development fees for cluster or low-income housing mix. I raise those procedural points because they're important, and apparently this applicant, for whatever reason, is seemingly getting special treatment. The problem with that is the public is then deprived of doing in-depth analysis of what they're actually doing instead of, you know, the long process where the application's filed early on and people can gather their forces. This applicant is treated differently, and that's to the detriment of citizens, including citizens groups which I represent. In my written submission, I first address the failure of CZ-1690 to comply with the comprehensive plan update.
Mr. Servant, before you move on to that, okay, you're questioning an act of the county council on December 16th, 08, or whenever that was.
Correct.
Why is it pertinent to this commission? Why don't you go to the council and say, hey, you acted inappropriately, go back to council? Why is it appropriate to us tonight?
In the same way that Mr. Schrader needs to make certain records in the administrative proceeding, I need to make those kind of records.
Okay.
I mean, I don't expect the commission to be able to do anything about that, but I have to raise it here so I can keep raising it on up.
Because in pecking order, we're slightly below.
Well, I understand that, okay, but Mr. Ross, I'm well cognizant of the fact that you can't change county council decisions.
Okay.
But I have to make you aware.
Fair deal.
So that I can make the county
just
council.
Just so you understand.
I understand.
Okay.
All right. First of all, one of the problems with this application is we really don't know what the project size is. You know, we have received, and I appreciate Mr. Wheatley's curtailment of the applicants presenting you these wonderful architectural drawings and these wonderful self-imposed constraints, but they don't mean anything. We're being asked, or the commission is being asked to approve 47 acres to be upzoned, almost the maximum upzoning from AR1 to CR1. I mean, that's a quantum leap in land uses. And what we're not telling us, commission, is what is the maximum I can build out here, whether it be commercial or some other of the litany of uses in the C1 zone. The applicant's not telling you that. And therefore, you can't make an informed decision on what the maximum impact would be on the community. You know, by sitting there saying, I'm going to restrain it to 320,000 square feet, there's nothing in the zoning ordinance that makes that limitation applicable or binding. So what the applicant should be coming in here and telling you and the citizens groups I represent is how many potential square feet I can build if I put in underground parking and if I do the maximum height and I do the maximum build out, because that would be the impact on the community, not the pretty pictures that the architects are showing you can be built. Sure, anything can be built, but the question is, what is the maximum impact of this approval on the county and the citizens of the county and the public health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the county, which is the concern of the enabling zoning ordinance. For an example, and I do this in my letter, what the applicant could do with the application of obtained 47, 46 acres CR1, then the applicant could take the other 22 acres, go to the Board of Adjustments, ask for a special use exception, turn that 22 acres into a parking lot, and then increase the amount of build-out he could have on the 47 acres. It's in my letter. The code sections are cited. But that's what could be done. Now, we all know that Mr. Zlingos and Mr. Townsend because they have roots into the community, may not want to do that. But who's to say they are going to be the ultimate developer? We are rezoning property that can be put to use as authorized by the zoning code. Mr. Key spent a great deal of time going minutely through all the various pages of the comprehensive plan and saying, where can I extract language and then make it applicable to this use? That's not what the comprehensive plan's all about. The comprehensive plan is, particularly in its future development phase, it's a graduated preference for development zones. It starts off with municipalities as being the primary area where you should concentrate growth. It then goes to the town centers. It then goes to developing areas, and the final low rung developable area is the environmentally sensitive areas because they are environmentally sensitive. So the plan says we locate growth where the plan says the municipalities are, where the town centers are, where the developing areas are, and then at the very end, the environmentally sensitive areas. So what the plan says is that in the environmentally sensitive developing areas, the plan provides that retail and office spaces are appropriate, but larger scale shopping centers and office parks should be confined to selected locations with access to arterial roads. The applicant reads that but as an and, but the but relies to the fact that the environmentally sensitive developing area is a rung, two rungs under the preferred town center for this type of use. And what that means is if you look at the town center development area under the code, and this is all at page 320, it specifies that for regional centers, you have to be in specified arterial roads. You have to be, let me just read it, the preference town center as the location for development identifies the location of regional shopping centers as confined to the highway commercial area, which are specifically approved locations on the map and map series that form the critical component of the county comprehensive plan adopted as having the force of law under 9 Del Code Section 6951. That leads me to what the applicant does not do and what is mandatory under the comprehensive plan and under the Delaware case law interpretation of the component of the comprehensive plan that has the force of law under the Quality of Life Act. The key section of the Quality of Life Act for our purposes today is 9 Del Code Section 6959A. And it states, after a comprehensive plan or element or portion thereof has been adopted by the County Council in conformity with this subchapter, the land use map or map series forming part of the comprehensive plan as required by this subchapter shall have the force of law. It's the map that has the force of law. What the applicant doesn't show you is how his location or its location on Gills Neck Road is in compliance with a future land use map. The reason is it can't. The future land use map shows that commercial areas are to be located in specific corridors. In this vicinity, the specific corridor runs from Five Points to the edge of Dewey Beach. There is no red mapping between, and that's the color code, there's no red mapping between Route 1 and along Gills Neck Road, or not along King's Highway going into the city. Just look at the map. And the fact of the matter is, it's the map that controls. And you don't have to believe me. You can believe Vice Chancellor Noble. What Vice Chancellor Noble observes, and this is in a case called O'Neill v. Town of Middletown, two things. In footnote 5 of my letter, there's an important legal element that is important to the commission. In most rezoning issues that come to the courts, the standard is whether the rezoning complied with the arbitrary, capricious standard of review or the fairly debatable rule. What O'Neill tells us, however, is that when you're looking as to whether the county rezones in accordance with their comprehensive plan, that's a substantial evidence standard as opposed to the arbitrary and capricious standard. So what happens in that case is the courts review whether there was substantial evidence of compliance with the mandatory components of the plan. What that means here is you look at the other critical ruling in O'Neill, and what it says, and this is O'Neill's, a 1906 case coming out of the town of Middletown, and the court basically rejected a rezoning that would authorize a Walmart super center. And one thing I don't mention in my text here.
What year did you say? 1906?
I'm sorry, 2006. Well, at least it wasn't terrorists as opposed to tourism.
Mr. Sergovic, if you're going to continue to test us to see if we're listening, okay?
All right. One thing about O'Neill that's I don't mention in my letter, one of the things that the town of Middletown relied upon was the plus saying that they were in compliance with their land use plan. And what O'Neill said, again, it's not in this text, but it's the case.
Okay.
What O'Neill says or determines is you can't rely upon plus saying it meets the compliance with the comp plan, particularly when plus doesn't give you a reason, and they didn't give you a reason here. So O'Neill's also instructive to you gentlemen on that point. And Mr. Robertson, I'm sure, can give you a copy of O'Neill and confirm what I'm saying makes some sense. The other important point of O'Neill, though, and for our purposes, it says Delaware's grant of zoning authority to the counties establishes that after they adopt comprehensive plans, the plans have the force of law, citing 9 Del Code, Section 265. These statutes provide, in pertinent part, that the land use map or map series forming part of the comprehensive plan shall have the force of law. And I'll skip down to what Vice Chancellor Noble observes. He says, interestingly, the Delaware Code provides that the land use map or map series have the force of law with respect to county plans, while a municipality's entire comprehensive plan carries the force of law. So the court's interpretation is to have compliance with a comprehensive plan that has the force of law, that is mandatory on this county and is mandatory by decree of the Delaware legislature, that the applicant has to come in here and show you that in the future land use map, if I want to have commercial area, I have to have it on the map. If it isn't on the map, it can't comply with the plan. It's really pretty simple. They can't comply with the mandatory component of the comp plan. And I go into this in Table 3. If you look at Mr. Key's statements, he takes 23 pages. There is almost every other page is repetitive. And he repeats on pages 1, 6, 8, 9. My letter's incorrect. There was also page 11 and 24. This phrase, the property is within a designated growth area, the environmentally sensitive area, with a designation of low to medium density, which specifically allows commercial residential district as demonstrated by Table 8, pages 2 or 3 through 28 of the comp plan. I assume what Mr. Keyes effort was that if he repeats the phrase often enough, it's going to mean something. It doesn't. It doesn't mean anything. If you look at Table 8, it says it's a residential distribution according to density preferences, similar to what I talked about earlier about the development areas start in the municipality, then go to the town centers, developing areas, environmentally centered areas. The comprehensive plan is actually a plan. It sets out a roadmap as to how you're supposed to pursue development. Table 8, there's no reference in the 2008 plan as to where we got to Table 8. It's just stuck in there. And look at the tables and look at the meaning of the tables. The tables are intended to provide some kind of support for the text of the plan and the plan's maps. All Table 8 does is says the plan proposes a residential use, which is low density, You don't have low-density commercial. You have low-density residential. It says if you're in the low-density area, then if your underlying zone allows residential use, you're then supposed to have residential low-density if you're in the environment in a low-density area. Look on down the table, and it says when you have a commercial area, the only allowed uses are B1, C1, or new commercial. It's just, it's a use chart compared to a zoning chart. There's nothing that says that if you're in the CR1 zone, that or that you're in the environmentally sensitive district, that automatically means you are entitled to CR1 zoning. I don't have a map in front of me, but if you look at the map on the page, or on the table at 320, that whole crosshatch area, according to Mr. Key, because it's zoned environmentally sensitive, would be available for CR1 zoning. That's absurd. The other thing that you all need to look at very carefully is how the application violates the zoning ordinance.
I think you all are familiar with this. It's the zoning map. It's last, this is also a copy I have in my office. Fortunately, this really helped me. The revised date for this map was 1989. Significant factor. I had somebody blow that map up because it's really significant for this. The purpose section of 115.83.1, which is the CR1 district, says the purpose of this district is to provide sufficient space in appropriate locations for a wide variety of commercial and miscellaneous service activities, generally serving a wide area and located particularly along certain existing major thoroughfares. Section 115.83.3 provides for large-scale uses. It says such uses shall be adjacent to a major arterial roadway as defined in 99.5 of the subdivision ordinance and be located where adequate infrastructure exists or is funded. The critical thing in the ordinance, Section 99.5, which was added on 6/11/91, which makes the 1988 zoning map applicable, it says, defines what the arterial roadways are under the code for the CR1 district, which was recently adopted in 2007 or 6. At any rate, it defined the arterial road as, again, there are a list of A through G. What it says, US 9 from its intersection with Delaware Route 1 to the southwestern town limit of the town of Lewis. In order to comply with the large scale use that fits on the arterial road as defined by the code, You have to be a business route mind. Why? And I blew up this section in about or a little bit before 1989. The town of Lewis annexed a gap between its traditional town and a project called Hennepin Gardens. That was the southwestern corner of the town of Lewis in 1991, and it's the southwestern corner today. The code, the applicable mandatory code section, doesn't say U.S. from U.S. Route 1 down U.S. Route 1 along Dartmouth Road to Kings Highway. The defined arterial road by the ordinance is Savannah Road. The applicants on Kings Highway, they can't comply with the zoning ordinance. And again, most of what I said is in my letter, but what I've said today is the true application of compliance with the comprehensive plan as mandated by the state legislature, as interpreted by the Chancery Court. It is the provisions of the zoning code as to what arterial road exists in this area. And unfortunately for Lingo Townsend, it's not Kings Highway. With that said, I'll ask Mr. Lenhart to give us a little explanation about that. The traffic issue.
Very good. Good evening. For the record, my name is Michael Lenhart, Lenhart Traffic Consulting, and I'd like to go through some of the information on record and make a presentation for you. I'll try to be brief, but I do have some points I would like to cover. Now, as I understand it, there was not an updated traffic impact study conducted for this project, for this application. There was one conducted in 2006 that was submitted to DLDOT and went through a thorough review and analysis by DLDOT and McCormick Taylor, their engineer. DLDOT, in the referral letter for the PLUS report dated May 18th of this year, DLDOT confirmed that the current proposal is sufficiently similar, to quote their words, in that the 2008 DLDOT comment letter is still valid. So therefore, they didn't go through a new analysis. And with that, I've got some exhibits. Some of these have a lot of information. I'm just going to try to highlight some of it. This exhibit is trip generation characteristics for shopping centers. This is obtained from the Institute for Transportation Engineers trip generation handbook. This is pass-by data, and what this shows on the bottom axis is the square footage of the shopping center, 100,000 square feet, 200, 300, 400, 500, all the way up to over a million. And this is a percentage of the traffic that is, and this is for the evening peak hour, percentage of traffic that is captured from the existing pass-by traffic versus new traffic that's generated. When you have a smaller center, and we have the International Council of Shopping Centers has data and definitions for different types of shopping centers. Neighborhood shopping center is average size is about 75,000 square feet. Community shopping center, average size, 183,000 square feet. Regional center, average 545. This application as submitted right now is a 387,000 square feet shopping center. Should be noted that's twice the size of an average community shopping center as defined by the International Council of Shopping Centers. It's twice the size of an average community shopping center. Now, when you're in smaller neighborhood centers, it generates much higher percentages of traffic from pass-by trips that are already on the road. You have a 30,000 square foot strip mall or 50,000 square foot that's going to have convenience stores and things where people are driving by, they want to stop and get milk, such items. As the size of the center grows, the users grow, you have large discount stores. A 387,000 square foot center would generate roughly 28% of its evening peak hour traffic from existing traffic on the road network. The other 72% would be new trips that they bring in from outside the area. So I just wanted to point that out, that the amount of traffic that would be coming from outside the area on this.
Excuse me, is it your suggestion that that's not reflected in the traffic study?
It's reflected in the trip distribution assignment that's in the traffic study. I do have some concerns about the assignment that they used in the study. It was reviewed and approved by DLDOT. I have some issues, concerns. I'll point that out, and you can, do what you want with that information.
Well, but I think it would be useful to us.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll do that. Now, this this is obviously very difficult to see, but the top row here is 90 single-family homes. The existing 45, roughly, acres that's being applied for rezoning, under the environmentally sensitive developing area, they recommend 2 units per acre. So if you use 2 units per acre, we would have 90 single-family units that would be able to develop in that area. In the morning peak hour, it would generate 72 trips. Evening peak hour, 96. Saturday, 90. Sunday, 90. And generates roughly 900 trips per day on a general average day. The shopping center, as proposed, 387,000 square feet, would generate 1,500 trips in the evening peak hour. Now, some of those are internal capture that's captured from the governors, and some are pass-by. However, almost 1,000 trips in the evening peak hour are new trips that are generated to and from the center that are not existing pass-by traffic and are not captured from neighboring developments. In the Saturday peak hour, it's almost 1,400. Trips in one peak hour. On a typical weekday, the site would generate roughly 12,000 new trips per day. Saturday would be roughly 15,000 new trips per day. And a Sunday would be roughly 7,000 new trips per day. Now, again, the existing zoning, residential zoning, 2 units per acre, would generate about 900 trips per day. This is anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500% more intense than the existing use. Orth Rogers pointed out after I made this same testimony last year that they felt that the daily traffic was not of any importance and that the peak hour traffic is what was important because in the traffic impact study, state uses the morning peak hour, evening peak hour, and the Saturday midday peak hour, each of those one-hour peak periods, to do their analysis and determine what the roads are going to operate at. But I feel that the daily traffic volume is extremely important here because it tells you what's going to happen those other 21 hours of the day. And what this shows, this data is from the ITE trip generation manual, and this is simply a graphic form of all these numbers. This is 10 a.m., 11 a.m., all the way through 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. This is midday, roughly noon. Now, what this shows, this line represents an evening or a weekday. So in the morning, traffic at the center is fairly low, and it peaks up around 11 o'clock, and it stays fairly high throughout the day till about 6 p.m., and then it tapers off. It's consistent throughout the day. It's not like a typical residential development would generate a short peak in the morning when people leave for work and a short peak in the evening when they come home. With retail, you've got intense use that starts roughly at 11 a.m. and goes until roughly 6 p.m., 7 hours throughout the day. And this represents the Saturday peak. So Saturdays are a little bit about 2 o'clock in the afternoon is roughly when that peaks on a Saturday. The point here being that what happens throughout the day is important. It's not just the peak hours you need to look at, and this would generate 13 to 14,000 more trips per day than the residential use. This is from the Comprehensive Plan's Future Land Use Plan. And this simply points out the trade area for this shopping center. Now, as defined by the Council of Shopping Centers, a community shopping center would have a trade area from 3 to 6 miles from the site. Trade areas are defined as representing 60 to 80% of the sales volume for the site. So 20 to 40% of the traffic and the sales is going to be generated outside the trade area. The site is located roughly in this area with Lewis. And this first ring represents a 3-mile trade area. Now, this site is twice the size of an average shopping center as defined by Council of Shopping Centers. And they suggest 3 to 6 miles. So this is a 6-mile range. Well, if it's twice as big as the average, I would suspect that it's going to pull from a larger trade area as well. And depending on the tenant mix of this site, it could be defined as a regional shopping center, could also be defined as a power center by the Council of Shopping Center definitions. Power centers and regional centers draw from 5 to 15 miles from the site. This band represents a 10-mile trade band. So the 15-mile band I didn't draw on here. That comes down near Bethany Beach and out by Georgetown. So depending on the tenant mix here, this could have significant draw. The applicant's traffic assignment that was approved by DLDOT shows 20 to 30% of the traffic generated by the site coming from Lewis area, Cape Henlopen. I think that it's going to be much more significant from a regional nature. So
those people off the coast are probably big spenders out in the Atlantic Ocean. You know?
They're going to have to swim a little bit.
The porpoise.
That's right. This is simply the exhibit of the original rezoning application that represents the full 68 acres and the 521,000 square foot center. These are side-by-side comparisons. Now, again, this is the original one with the full, including the 22 acres on the south. This is the current application. When you look at the intensity of the development on this versus this same 45 acres, the current application with the potential 387,000 square feet is actually slightly more intense in the area of rezoning than the original application was. This current application represents a 19% Florida area ratio. The original one was 17%. I think that the mayor touched on this as well. It's important to think ahead on what may happen in the future. If this rezoning is granted, that the 22 acres to the south end could potentially come in as a piecemeal, or with a make a case of a change in use. Well, you granted this one. Well, why don't you grant this one? And what I've done with this is I've laid the current application over top of the original application. And you can see, and again, this break line here represents the current application, prior application. The drive aisles line up, the pads line up. It seems to fit perfectly for future redevelopment of the southern piece. And DelDOT, in the May 18th Plus report, is on record stating that they will grant this right-in, right-out access to the future, I believe they, as a quote, the future expansion of the shopping center. So there may be some contemplation to that there, and I think it's important to keep that in mind, that could be down the road. This is the existing land use plan out of the comp plan and Route 1. And you can see the existing commercial highway uses all along Route 1. This is King's Highway, and there are no commercial land uses along that portion of roadway currently. State policies for spending out of the comp plan. Site is located right here. Most of the site is in investment area level three, and I'll point out later why that's important from a transportation perspective. This is the areas of concern map. It is within area of concern. This is a future land use plan. Again, State Route 1. This is King's Highway. Savannah comes out to here. And nowhere on King's Highway do they have highway commercial. You can see this is all contemplated as highway commercial. They have some up here and some down a little further to the south. And if you go back and look at the existing land use plan, you can see that there are smatterings of highway commercial along Route 1. It's not fully zoned or developed as highway commercial. Future land use plan contemplates that could become more fully developed along State Route 1 as the market bears out. Now, I do have, all right, from the comp plan, I'd like to speak about that for a moment. Page 315 of the comp plan, 3-15, under environmentally sensitive developing areas. One of the points in there, it says that the challenge to developing in the environmentally sensitive developing area is to safeguard natural resources and mitigate congestion without stifling tourism and real estate markets. And I'll point out how this project can't move forward without congestion. It's on record by DelDOT, by the applicant, for the traffic engineer this evening. Also, under permitted uses, page 3-16 of the comp plan, I'm going to read a little bit from my report. I do have a report I'll be submitting tonight, but I'm just going to read a few paragraphs here. Under permitted uses, comp plan states that retail and office uses are appropriate, but larger shopping centers and office parks should be confined to selected locations, and I'll emphasize selected locations, and I'll get back to that, with access to arterial roads. The applicant's taking the position that since the property abuts an arterial road, it automatically satisfies this criteria. However, I have several problems with this assertion. First, not only is this a large shopping center, it's twice the size of an average community shopping center as defined by the International Council of Shopping Centers, and could also fit the definition of a regional or power center, depending on the mix of uses. The future land use plan in the 2008 comp plan already identifies those selected areas that were quoted in that last statement that are appropriate for commercial development in environmentally sensitive developing areas with access to arterial roads, and they do not include King's Highway. And I'll clear that up here a little bit. When referring to the future land use plan, it is obvious that there are numerous locations along State Route 1 that are intended to be developed with CR1 zoning. And these locations are within the environmentally sensitive developing areas. So in order for these areas to be fully built out and realized as commercial highway or highway commercial, there needed to be a stipulation in the comp plan that says that if you're in the environmentally sensitive developing area and you have access to a arterial, then you can develop highway commercial may be appropriate zoning. And with that stipulation, they then used the future land use plan, they mapped out where those areas are appropriate. Those areas are on State Route 1. They are not on State Route 9. So I would submit to you that that statement about arterials is in there, and it was carefully thought out and selected that this is the arterial that they were referring to, and that these are the selected areas that are appropriate for CR1 use. Also, under permitted uses, it states that a careful mixture of light homes or of homes with light commercial and institutional uses can be appropriate to provide convenient services and to allow people to work close to home. This use, as proposed, is not a convenient service, is not a light commercial. If you look at the functional road classification map, King's Highway is identified as an arterial, but it goes down to the Lewis Ferry, and it's clear that it is an arterial because of the Lewis Ferry. Lewis Ferry carried 350,000 vehicles in the year of 2006, and to try to use the comp plan and the fact that this is an arterial to upzone this land will have detrimental impacts to the state park, Lewis, and ferry access and operation. With regards to the traffic impact study, DLDOT is a referral agency in the land use process. The report stated that dualization is the most effective solution, but it didn't say that it solves all the problems. And in fact, in the DLDOT report, it says that dualization is the most effective solution, but you're still going to have failures, and they pointed out where those failures are going to occur. Then they said that even though dualization is the most effective solution, it's really not reasonable to require that of this developer. So They stated that if the county chooses to approve this project, that you, number one, require a smaller subset of improvements from this developer, and number two, nominate Kings Highway for a future CTP project for funding, public funding for dualization. Now, DLDOT and Orth Rogers reports have both shown significant failures at the study intersections with the DLDOT recommended improvements, that subset of improvements. And even with the dualization, the DLDOT report shows that there will still be failures. So the dualization is still not going to solve all of the problems. Considering that this is located in an investment level three area, investment level threes, they state that public funding is not appropriate for road improvements to encourage new development. I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along those lines. Now, in the past, and on the record in writing, Orth Rogers has made statements that there's going to be three intersections that fail with or without their development. And they've said that, you know, whether you do it or not, they're going to fail. So, that's, you know, it seems to be okay. We'll just put these improvements in, and DLDOT's kind of agreed to these improvements. I believe this statement is misleading and doesn't paint the whole picture. There are different types and degrees of failure. Yes, these three intersections fail with and without, but you have to understand what that means. For example, Kings Highway at Clay Road, existing, it's an unsignalized intersection. If you pull up at the stop sign and you sit and you try to wait for a gap in traffic, if you wait longer than a certain period of time, you get frustrated, and it's defined as a level of service F because you're waiting too long for your turn to turn left. Under existing and under background traffic conditions, background meaning future 2014 traffic volumes with all of the approved background developments, it still fails, assuming that it's not signalized, that it's a stop sign, no other improvements, you've added all this other background traffic, it still fails. Well, of course it does, because it's going to. It's a stop sign and it fails today. Then they go on to say that, and this is the DLDOT report, if you signalize it and provide the temporary improvements without dualization, the intersection would fail, and it would operate anywhere from 150 to 200% at its capacity, meaning 50 to 100% above its capacity during certain time periods. And even if you dualize the roadway and signal it with all of the full set of improvements that DLDOT claims is the most effective solution, it still operates at a level of service F in at least one peak hour. So it's correct that there is some sort of failure, but you need to understand what those failures are and the degrees of them. To fully understand the impact of this rezoning, the reports should have evaluated what improvements would have been required to correct today's failures and the failures in 2014 without the rezoning of this property. And they did not do that. No one took that analysis and took that step, because you really need to see if you zone it commercial versus leaving it is what it is today, and even building the 90 homes on it, what type of improvements would be needed under each of those scenarios. They only looked at, if you rezone it, what's needed. And we have done that using traffic volumes provided by DLDOT, the 2014 traffic volumes. Without the rezoning of this property, we looked at Clay Avenue, at Kings Highway and Clay Road, and if we just simply install a traffic signal and turn lanes on Kings Highway, the intersection would operate, and this is 2014, everything built without the rezoning, it would operate at acceptable levels of service, D or better. versus with the rezoning, it would operate at a level service F, even with more significant improvements. Failures at Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road can be eliminated with turn lanes on Kings Highway and some minor widening on Gills Neck Road for additional lane. Again, level service C or better, with minor improvements. And I say minor when comparing it to a dualization project. Adding a couple of turn lanes is minor. And even with the dualization, which is not funded, everybody's saying it's not funded, there'd still be failing conditions. And State Route 1 and Dartmouth, they're looking to put a triple left in there. That was the recommendation. Even with the triple left, that intersection is going to fail dramatically. All right, I'd like to just show very briefly. I don't think I showed this at the last Planning Commission hearing. This is the DelDOT conducted a Kings Highway corridor study using the traffic information from the last submittal. And in that study, they used Synchro software, which is it's a modeling tool that looks at all of the study intersections. Basically, it takes a traffic study from a written report and puts it into a video format. And what I've done is just recorded 4 or 5 minutes here. Not even be quite that long. 3 minutes. And this is the intersection of Route 1. Route 1, this is Dartmouth Road, this is Kings Highway, and you can see, and this tool, this file was provided to me by DelDOT. It has all of the future traffic volumes in it, I used the same timing, and we installed the triple left turn, so this has the triple left turn that is being recommended by DelDOT. You can see here queuing from the triple left turn is backed up already and has blocked off the free right. And now here's Kings Highway. And I should also say that I ran this model for 2 hours. For the first half hour or so, the backups weren't that bad, but then the failures just continue, and since it's over capacity, the queues continue to back up. Now, we're just kind of scanning north here. And this is Gills Neck Road. You can see the queues. This is southbound or westbound Kings Highway. And I don't know why this is coming off the screen here. again, the queues are back, and here's Freeman, and then going down into the town, and it's even backed up further. And this is with all of the interim improvements that have been recommended by DelDOT and agreed to by the applicant. This is what's out there, and the intersections at Kings Highway and Clay Road, Kings Highway, Gills Neck, fail, but the real problem here is State Route 1 at Dartmouth. That intersection, even with the triple left, is simply over capacity and can't support this kind of, you've got the ferry, you've got the state park, you've got, you know, a secondary access into Lewis and all of the other several thousand residential development, there are residential units back in here that have been approved. When you add that all into the intersection at State Route 1, it simply doesn't work, and it causes these backups. So this.
Why did DelDOT sign off on the project? Why did they sign off? Why did they say it's okay?
I don't. my opinion, DelDOT is a referral agency to the county in this matter.
DelDOT controls all the roads in Sussex County. DelDOT writes our transportation section of our comprehensive land use plan, every word.
Yeah.
They are in total control of our transportation system. When they say, this is okay with us, they're the god of transportation. So why did they approve this if you're saying it's so wrong?
I don't believe that they said they're okay with it. I believe that
the letter in the record, it says that.
Well, if you go back to the, I don't have it right here with me. If you go back to the January 15th, I think it is, 2008 letter from McCormick Taylor on behalf of DelDOT, that letter says, it points out all of these deficiencies, and it states that if the county chooses to approve this, this is what we recommend. And it says the dualization project is not a reasonable project to require of one developer. Therefore, we recommend the smaller subset. But my opinion, based on what I've looked at, much of these failures are due to this commercial rezoning. The existing issues out there can be solved, but the rezoning of this project will cause failures. And I mean, if you go back to the reports, DelDOT, even though they've said in this latest PLUS report, they said we have no objection, I don't know why they would say that. I mean, if you go back and look at their evaluation, it clearly points out failures in there. And the applicant's traffic engineer has acknowledged that tonight. And they've even said in DelDOT's judgment, I think was how they worded it, they felt that DelDOT felt that that's all they could ask for. I would put it back to the county in that DelDOT, as a referral agency, is giving you the information that you need to evaluate this and determine if this is an appropriate land use and if the impact is acceptable to the county. I mean, it's the county's ultimate determination whether to approve this land use and this rezoning or not. So, I guess that's...
Summation.
Yeah,
can you give the commissioners your background credentials, because
yes,
it's not in your written material?
Sure. Again, my name is Michael Lenhardt. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of Maryland and Delaware. I'm a licensed professional traffic operations engineer with the Institute of Transportation Engineers, a member of ITE. I have 20 years of experience. I worked for Maryland State Highway Administration for 10 years, and then been in the private sector doing traffic engineering consulting for the past 10 years. I've been involved in hundreds of rezoning projects, and the issue here really is, does this rezoning impact health, safety, and welfare? Does it adversely impact? Does it meet your comp plan? I believe, based on my testimony and based on what's in the written report I submit, that this project does not conform to the comp plan and will have adverse impacts on health, safety, and welfare that cannot and are not adequately mitigated based on DelDOT information on record, based on the applicant's information. Tonight, he confirmed that level of service here will exceed level of service D. Based on that information, the fact that the information or the infrastructure is not available to support this rezoning and it's not in conformance with the comp plan, I would submit to you respectfully, I believe this should be denied.
Okay, thank you.
Questions?
I'd like to call Mr.
Just real quick before Mr. Moyer goes, Mr. Lenhardt, you talked about your report. Is that the same one that's in Mr. Cervic's book already?
All of my reports are in my book.
I just want to make sure there weren't.
The PowerPoint.
Okay. No, I saw that. I just want to make sure that we didn't have two reports. Thanks.
I wonder if we need everybody to take a stretch for a minute. Did you ever allow something like that?
More than a stretch.
I will when I think it's time.
All right. Let me correct one thing that Mr. Sergovic mentioned about my background. As a longtime DENREC employee, I'm an ex-longtime DENREC employee. I worked there for 30 years. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a pass for Sussex County. Even though I'm from Dover, I was born and raised in Lewis and raised in Laurel. So if you want to put an asterisk by my testimony, feel free to do so. I'm testifying here tonight to present evidence in opposition to the rezoning of land for a shopping center located at the southeast corner of the Kings Highway and Gills Neck Road intersection. The site is currently zoned AR1. The existing application before you is a change of zone request to have approximately 45.77 acres to be upzoned to ZR1. I'm confident that the testimony that I am presenting will provide irrefutable evidence and facts that will convince the commission to deny the zoning request. My testimony will present evidence on several subject areas. These include the following. A, the proposed rezoning for a shopping center does not comply with the Sussex County's June 2008 comprehensive plan update. B, the proposed rezoning preliminary site plan / public hearing information packet contains insufficient detail on which to make any meaningful comments on the environmental impacts of the proposed shopping center because the environmental assessment is incomplete. Constructive participation in the rezoning process is severely restricted if the application is incomplete, and particularly if the rezoning is approved, public input is almost non-existent. I've included a summary of the flaws in the rezoning process as an attachment to my testimony. C, the proposed shopping center does not comply with the requirements of an environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone. D, the proposed shopping center will have adverse and irreversible impacts on the Delaware Inland Bays watershed and the tributaries of the Inland Bays. First, number A, noncompliance with the June 2008 comprehensive plan update. Number one, Section 6.6 Water Supply Protection of the Comprehensive Plan Update states that Sussex County's Source Water Protection Ordinance will meet the requirements of the State Water Pollution Control Law of 2001. It does not. In a letter dated April 23, 2007, to Mr. Hal Godwin, Assistant Administrator for Sussex County, DENREC listed 9 concerns with the county's draft ordinance. Not all the current concerns were addressed. For example, DNREC requested that Section 89-5C, that contains language allowing Sussex County Council to override challenges to the excellent recharge area mapping designation, be stricken. DNR believed that the designation of excellent recharge areas be, quote, be based entirely upon scientific and technical merit.
Mr. Moyer, quotation. The adequacy of the county ordinance, whether it meets your opinion or DENREC's opinion, is not pertinent to the discussion, okay? Maybe they don't like the ordinance as it's written, but it is the ordinance that is written. So
Stand.
If you could at least stay, and I've read through your testimony, and it's well written, so don't get angry with me.
But no.
Let's not opine on the adequacy or the inadequacy of ordinance, okay? Let's stay to the pertinent discussion.
This point well taken. Thank you. Second, the water supply section of the county comprehensive plan update also states that the following regarding the protection of water supply wells, quote, one of the best ways to avoid contamination of important water supply wells is to avoid intensive industrial and commercial development that uses hazardous material, close quotes. Second quote, the ideal type of land use around water supply wells is preserved open space, close quotes. Third quote, agricultural uses are beneficial for groundwater recharge because the water used for irrigation returns to the ground, close quote. The proposed shopping center is directly over the city of Lewis's well recharge area, and there will be commercial development that could use hazardous material. There will also be vehicles in the parking lots that I will show are a source of hazardous material. Runoff from impervious areas could contaminate the city's wells, or the impervious areas could reduce the amount of recharge resulting in saltwater intrusion. This was a major concern expressed in the Office of State Planning Coordination's comments on the proposed shopping center. For these reasons, the shopping center does not comply with the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update. B, lack of specific detail in the preliminary site plan / public hearing information packet.
Again, Mr. Moria, I hate to be rude and continue to interrupt, but this is not a site plan preliminary hearing. It's a conditional use, so there isn't any detail in site plan because it's not required.
Well, the document, the only response to that would be is that the document that was submitted to the commission was titled Preliminary Site Plan / Public Hearing Information Packet.
It is.
And the applicant,
as Mr. Schrader said, they would overlap to some degree, and we've allowed great latitude in that, okay? But for you to use that to say somehow it's not in compliance with state law, that's not the point, okay? Tie it in to the appropriateness of the conditional use app or the
I wasn't going to tie it into state law. I was going to tie it into the comprehensive plan.
Well, but since it's not there, you're just saying that it isn't there. It's not expected to be there, okay? So the fact that it's absent is not pertinent, okay?
Okay. Number one, throughout the applicant's environmental assessment, mention is made of other documents that are incorporated into the EA by reference. It is not possible to comment on the adequacy of incorporated documents unless they are included in the environmental assessment. Therefore, the environmental assessment is incomplete. Two, an environmental assessment is supposed to identify environmental impacts and address specifically how the impacts will be mitigated or reduced. The submitted environmental assessment does not do this. For example, in tab number two, the statement of conformity with a June 2008 comprehensive plan update states that nutrients from the site will be reduced by compliance with the state's pollution control strategy. Where are the design plans and calculations to prove this statement?
Well, hang on for a minute. I'm going to have to back up Mr. Ross here. That information is typically not introduced at this point. We're here to answer one question tonight, and that question is this site appropriate for the zoning change that has been requested? That's the question we're answering. The issues that you're raising are site plan issues, they're compliance issues, they're all things that are simply beyond the scope of the question we're answering this evening. I understand that they have an impact, and your letter is on the record, but the constant beating about the state law and state regulations and not requiring with the minutiae of the rules is just beyond what we're doing here tonight.
Please don't misunderstand.
Mr. Ross, wait a second. Before we go any further, because what they're talking about, I believe, and I want to find out because I want to see if it's relevant, is the environmental assessment that's required for the environmentally sensitive development.
That's what we're saying.
District.
I mean, we had a lot of testimony from George Miles and Burr as to how they were complying. They went through A through H. And what we're saying, and we'll skip over the letter because it's getting late at night. It's in the record, so we don't have to incorporate it. The point's made that in order to, for the citizens group to understand what the applicant's saying, the citizens group needs to know that when they're making these bold statements to the effect that I'm going to use green technology.
I think the point that you're making, you're trying to, is that their environmental assessment that was submitted as part of this application process, and I'm just trying to quote so I understand for the commission's benefit, had conclusory statements in it, I think.
Conclusory statements, okay. And the point of this testimony is the conclusory statements are not supported by adequate evidence. That type of an application violates the opponent's due process rights so that they can have a meaningful presentation. When the applicant puts in a conclusory statement without supporting data, okay, you don't know nor can the citizens be informed that that data is inaccurate to support the conclusion. That's the only point of this testimony. Just go on to D with respect to, I think that is pertinent. That
the commission's benefit, and I didn't mean to interrupt you all, but I just wanted to get that going.
No, I stand corrected, because quite frankly, that's what I was trying to figure out. It's where in the world are we going with all this? Thank you, Mr. Sergovic, for your explanation. Okay, sir. He's made your point for you. I'm going to let you finish, but let's make it snappy.
Okay. I'll let the rest of
you. Now, everybody, let's relax a little bit. I'm going to let the man finish. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'll let the rest of that section speak for itself in the record.
And then you all can talk as long as you want. Go ahead.
D, the proposed shopping center will have adverse and irreversible impacts on the Inland Bays watershed and the tributaries of the Inland Bays. Number one, I served on the governor's task force on the Inland Bays, the governor's environmental legacy program study group, and the governor's freshwater wetlands roundtable. I'm presently a member of the Center for the Inland Bays Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee, the Citizens Advisory Committee. For over 30 years, I was an environmental program manager for DENREC, administering a program to protect wetlands, submerged lands, and water quality. The Inland Bays are experiencing continuing degradation and deterioration in water quality. If steps are not taken to improve point and non-point pollution into the tributaries flowing into the bays, and from the discharge of contaminated groundwater from reaching the bays by way of underground flow, one of the major economic and environmental attractions to eastern Sussex County will inevitably meet its demise. Approximately 70% of the tributaries leading into the inland bays are designated as impaired by DENREC. Two, there are many sources of contamination that will come from the proposed shopping center, and as I have testified, the applicant has not provided sufficient information in the information packet to determine what the impacts will be. Three, examples of contaminants from the shopping center include potentially hazardous material, nutrients, suspended sediments, road salt, and oil and grease. I think that everyone in attendance of this hearing has witnessed the stains on parking lots as a result of oil leaking from automobiles. I should note that a DENREC official told me that a quart of oil can contaminate 20 million gallons of groundwater. All of the contaminants that I have mentioned will find a path to Pothook Creek, either flowing over the surface of the land, through the unconfined groundwater aquifer, or as a result of a storm for which the stormwater retention system has not been designed. The result will undoubtedly lead to a deterioration of Pothook Creek and eventually the Inland Bays. Four, the discharge of fresh water from the proposed shopping center will also change the salinity pattern of Pothook Creek and the surrounding wetlands. In other areas of the Inland Bays watershed, this has led to a change in the vegetative makeup of the wetlands with the invasion of less desirable species. The change in salinity alters the entire ecosystem of the receiving waters. Recent studies have shown that the entire fishery off the northeast coast of the United States has decreased due to improperly treated urban and rural runoff. Five, additional flow into Pothook Creek will also lead to the undercutting of the Morris Edge with subsequent sloughing of the wetlands and siltation of the creek and downstream tributary. Again, the submitted environmental assessment does not address this issue. In a 39-page paper titled The Impacts of Motor Vehicle Operation on Water Quality, a Preliminary Assessment, authors Hillary Nixon and Jean Spaniel Sephores describe the residue that results from the operation of motor vehicles that contribute heavily to non-point source pollution and groundwater pollution. These include sediment, oils, and grease from leaks or improperly discarded used oil, heavy metals from car exhausts, worn tires and engine parts, brake pads, rust, used antifreeze, and road salts. All of these contaminants can easily find their way into the groundwater under the Lingo Townsend land, which, as I have said, is a major recharge area for the city of Lewis's drinking well. Additionally, these contaminants can migrate laterally through the groundwater and into Pothook Creek. There are proposed improvements to the highway system adjacent to the proposed shopping center. These improvements will allow for more traffic in the vicinity of the proposed shopping center, and along with traffic going to and coming from the center will almost certainly lead to the contamination of Lewis's wells. I would go back to one comment which isn't controversial. The report states that there are no wetlands on the proposed site of the shopping center. 2 days ago, I visited the Corps of Engineers office in Dover, Delaware, and they have no record of a wetlands delineation being conducted on this site. So it's quite possible that there could be cropped or farmed wetlands out in the field which have not been identified. I would also like to clarify the letter that came from Connie Holland, State Planning Coordination Director, in which she states that she has no objection to the rezoning. I met with Ms. Holland last week. She said that the intent of that letter was that she has no objection to the rezoning as long as all of the conditions met in their plus comments are complied with. In conclusion, I would like to state that one of the functions of government is to protect human health and welfare. It should be crystal clear that the location of a shopping center over a municipality's wellhead recharge area is not in the best interest of the city of Lewis, its residents, and the residents of Sussex County. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Good evening.